CL Talk, delivering current news, reporting, and analysis of the legal landscape from coast to coast.
Innovation means different things to different people, or at least people picture innovation differently. For some, the idea of innovation conjures images of new technologies and scientific breakthroughs, while for others, it simply means pioneering a new way to perform old tasks. Regardless of how it's defined, innovation is something law firms often struggle to demonstrate for their clients. In fact, less than 15% of clients recognize a law firm as a provider that demonstrates modern, innovative practices. That's a number McCarthy Tetreault is looking to change, at least for their clients. For McCarthy Tetreault, innovation simply means helping clients tackle their most pressing issues in a more effective, creative, or efficient manner. Now, to discuss what that means, today we're talking to Matt Peters, National Innovation Leader at McCarthy Tetreault, and Susan Wertzman, partner and founder of MT3. Matt, Susan, thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Hi, Greg. Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, I really appreciate having us.
Let's jump right into the first question. What are some of the current challenges that law firms and their clients are experiencing? And is there a common trend appearing or an overarching concern that you've noticed?
You know, I think there's a couple trends that we're definitely seeing and have seen over the past number of years. You know, one is around just the sort of tension that, as you said, clients have, where there's a growing level of complexity that clients are having to deal with, like the scope of what they have to cover inside their organizations has been growing, and the complexity of the issues have been expanding. But at the same time, there's a lot of budget pressure around sort of maintaining budgets. And so that just creates a lot of tension, I think, inside our clients. And at the same time, you know, if you go back kind of whatever, there's 10 years, you know, clients, you know, had great in-house legal teams that they would rely on and then reach out to law firm partners when they needed help on issues. That's changed now, where you're seeing clients having to do not only serve, you know, a lot more with their own internal team and working with their law firms, but they have those expectations that they're working with alternative legal service providers, technologists, and other consultants and other pieces that they're having to integrate in order to sort of deliver sort of the services that they need to deliver.
Just to add to that, I think that another challenge that law firms are facing is this really strong interest from clients for advice about technology and how they can use technology. So they want to know about some of the tools and process to make their legal needs, like sort of improve their legal process. And, you know, many law firms just don't have the expertise to provide that advice. So it's challenging. And to, you know, another layer of complexity to add to that yet again is really all of the challenges that clients are facing around now security and privacy compliance. So that, you know, they want the technology to help them, and law firms aren't traditionally set up to be providing that advice.
Yeah. Now, how have that complexity, how has that shaped how you guys meet your clients' needs? And especially when it comes to non-traditional tools and innovation.
Well, if I jump in on that, one of the ways that we've been meeting our clients' needs that way is by supplementing our team with technologists, with engineers, with developers, with people who have understanding of the technology, so they can actually work alongside, side by side, the lawyers in building the client solutions, the technology solutions. And then also really being able to advise clients on, when we're talking about some of the challenges they face, about how to use these tools properly. So how to test them. So we'll be testing them in terms of at our firm internally in a safe environment, and develop then a defensible process on how to use some of the technology. And we can share that and pass that along to our clients.
And we've also, just to add to that, you know, we've taken a step back and said, we actually need to think about sort of how we organize us as a firm a bit differently as well. And what I mean by that is we have a traditional law firm with the talent that we are fortunate to be able to sort of build and develop. And that's delivering sort of, you know, insights and helping sort of clients with these complex issues that they're facing. But, you know, we stepped back and said we should also help clients as you know, integrate a bunch of these different pieces together that they're now having to integrate. And what I mean by that is, you know, we set up a completely different platform for these divisions that we've been able to sort of acquire or launch, and that's different technology, different talent, as you said, Susan, and just really thinking about sort of, you know, integrating all of those other pieces for a client. And, you know, it's been really interesting to kind of see how that experiment, what started off as an experiment, has sort of gone, because, you know, clients have really responded, you know, well to the idea that we can provide both certain commodity services that they need, technology insights, as you said, Susan, and also what a bit of a, something we didn't expect, at least I didn't expect at the beginning, but we're seeing now, is that we can take some of those services and some of those tools and layer them on and work really closely with some of our leading lawyers and give them greater insights and perspective on things than they would have sort of in the traditional law firm environment. And that's, you know, obviously now leveraging AI and data and these other things, but also just, you know, a bunch of the tools and workflows that not only are supporting our clients, but actually supporting out of the divisions, a number of our lawyers and practice groups as well.
There's so much for clients to consider, and each client has their own unique set of needs. What should they keep in front of mind when implementing these new technologies or these new process improvements? And what should they be wary of?
It's a really good question, because I think, you know, people sometimes go into this sort of assuming, well, let's just sort of get another piece of technology, or, you know, let's you know, do a simple process improvement and off we go. What we've certainly learned is that, you know, thinking about these as a one and done kind of process really doesn't work. And so what I mean by that is that whether you take on a piece of technology or you're improving a particular process, you have to look at that and sort of say, how are we going to iterate over and over again, starting typically with what's the minimum viable product to get this out the door, and then how do we keep improving and iterating, you know, likely be over, you know, the months and years to come, and having some dedicated resources that are able to do that. And the other piece that we certainly learned from early on in going through the journey is that if you don't begin by thinking about the change management exercise, when you're implementing a technology, like in the old days, we would sort of roll out a piece of technology, send an email, and assume that we're done, right? Change management was the email. What we're realizing is, you know, simply rolling out a piece of technology is in and of itself a reasonably useless exercise. You have to think about, you know, how is people going to interact with this? How are you going to send them to use it? Like, how does this improve their lives? How do you communicate? These are all very busy people, and it's the same for our clients. You know, really thinking about sort of the change management exercise around incenting utilization, and then continually sort of experimenting with sort of what's going to sort of draw people in to use the tools. And if it doesn't work, be prepared to kind of pivot. And pivoting can be extreme, from shifting to different tool to just continually sort of trying different ways to get, you know, the different populations sort of engaged with the tool or the process.
And maybe it's part of the change management piece, but I think that also it's like there's kind of three C's, including change management is the first, but that clients need to think about. And one is customization. So you're also thinking, when you're implementing new technology, is this going to work out of the box, or is it going to have to be customized to work in my environment? And how's that going to plug into the environment that we're already working in? So that's, I think, a huge question and requires enough, you know, analysis. But then the second one is culture. And yeah, how are you going to make this work within your own culture? And how are you going to, does this piece of technology actually support the culture that your organization has? Because another corporation organization may say, we're using this and it's great, but if it doesn't work in your own culture, you have to really consider and think about that. And it really ties into the change management piece as well, because you want to almost try to implement that technology, but at the same time, minimize the disruption to your employees. So, because as much as the technology may help them and it may advance and improve process at your organization, at the same time, it can't overwhelm people who are in the middle of their day-to-day jobs and the work that they have to do. So I think you've got to always be thinking about that customization, the culture, and the change management.
And just to drill down, Greg, if it's okay, one more point there, it related to what you just said, Susan, is, you know, is stakeholder mapping. And, you know, we've seen this a number of times, you know, with clients that roll things out where, you know, the assumption is the stakeholders were, for example, the internal team, and we've done the same. Like, we've thought about sort of, this is just our lawyers, not thinking about the fact that, you know, in a much more broad way, thinking about who are all the other stakeholders that can be impacted by this. And we've seen, for example, where, you know, like e-billing systems and other things rolled out by clients where the vendors have promised glorious things that are going to happen. And the reality is some of the complexity around not just law firms and alternative service providers, but other kind of individual contractors and others sort of integrating with these tools and whatever. If all of those stakeholders haven't been taken into consideration, these things tend to have a sort of a higher risk of failure, or at, you know, failure being defined as not just not working, but maybe not delivering near the results that people are expecting.
How do you prepare clients for that disruption, that change? So what do clients need to plan for after the initial implementation stage?
So I think that one of the pieces that, you know, is critical is a pilot where you're actually stress testing what you're going to be doing and stress testing the technology, but also how people are going to use that technology. And, you know, I speak all the time about the necessary combination when you're implementing a project or technology, the combination of people, process, and technology. But I don't mind repeating sort of how necessary it is to have all three pieces in place to really ensure the deployment of any new technology. So, you know, there are times when our clients struggle to effectively deploy the expensive technology that they've purchased. And, you know, they've gone through the whole RFP process and they're certain they've, you know, purchased and analyzed the best piece of technology, but it stalls or fails because they don't have the time and the money to train the team. And they haven't really built the playbook that outlines the process to be followed. So you need to bring all of that, the people and the technology and the process together. And it sounds like, you know, really, really obvious, but if one of those pieces gets missed, the technology solution will probably not be as successful as planned.
Yeah, and just to add to that, I think expectation setting tends to be something that we see being misaligned. Everybody assumes that this will work perfectly. They never work perfectly. And so setting expectations low and then iterating over and over again so that you ultimately can actually hit what the ultimate objectives were for the rollout. And that this can take years sometimes, and just really allowing the organization to sort of understand and expect that the results day one will not be what people want them to be, that their life is going to be different and they have to do different things. But know that we will get there. And there's a commitment over time to continually sort of iterate on the people, process, and technology so that this thing will not only sort of, you know, meet their expectations, but hopefully one day sort of exceed them.
This is the big part now. I want to talk about the divisions that McCarthy Tetrault has. You have a number of divisions, five of them, each unique, and they each provide a tailored solution for your clients, and they work together sometimes and they work separately at other times. Can you maybe tell our listeners a bit more about each one? And just to illustrate, share some examples of a client challenge that was solved with one of the MT divisions.
Do you want me to go first with, I can start with MT3 because that was the first division. So MT3 focus is e-discovery and information governance, although it's morphed over the 7 years that it's been in existence to also supporting our lawyers in terms of breach response, privacy solutions, and generally building client technology solutions. So it's a team of a combination of lawyers, technologists, and project managers who support sort of a variety of initiatives at the firm. Just sort of some recent examples are some mass actions that we've been working on where it's not just an e-discovery database where we're custodians of data, but we actually have to be change makers, and we're building solutions that are integrating multiple tools so that we can manage thousands of clients, hundreds or thousands of clients in mass actions, which is, it's really interesting. We built a During the pandemic, we built a vaccine verification solution. We've built a contract management solution using the tools that we have. So really, really varied solutions. MT3 also works really closely with a couple of our other divisions, one being MT Version, which offers translation solutions. And there's a lot of the work that MT3 is involved in, where having the in-house capability for translation is really been significant for our clients. So Matt may want to say a little bit more about MT Version. MT Align was our, I think I'm getting this right, was our second division, Matt. You'll correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
And MT Align is really a lawyers on demand solution. And the nice thing about how MT3 and MT Align have worked together is we're able to adopt and follow a lot of similar process. We're able to have people move between the two divisions as needed to respond to client needs in terms of whether it's for MT Align, whether it's responding to someone's on a leave or a secondment, and we're placing lawyers for special projects. We'll look at both of our pools of lawyers to be able to respond to those needs.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the two others, MTI Plus, is an immigration solution for clients. And, as Susan, as you said, this going from a traditional, we're providing immigration services, to the idea that this is a solution that, where we think about people, process, and technology to deliver really high caliber experience. So what we took was a traditional sort of immigration practice and converted it into what is, by all accounts, sort of the market leading sort of immigration solution in the country now, where, again, it's more than just really intelligent, smart people that are collected together, but we've layered on technology and really important kind of workflows and processes so that the quality and the insights associated with that work are enhanced, and the experience is different for clients than what it was in the traditional immigration sort of practice. The other one that we have is MT Ventures. And again, the same approach, like our basic thesis on all of the divisions is what's something, a line of business that would be adjacent to our core business, that's complementary to our core business as a law firm, and that we can think about people, process, technology in a different way to kind of deliver those services in a way that serves, again, complementary to sort of what our clients are looking for. And MT Ventures is in that sort of early stage, high growth technology company space, where a traditional model just doesn't really work for that space. Certainly at the early stage, where the clients are looking for sort of, different price points, different insights. And so we were able to, again, sort of take technology, different talent pool, and some, quite frankly, different workflows that sort of really support them, and different resources. Like you touched on this before, Susan, where like the traditional law firm resources can provide one set of solutions and services for an early stage company, but we also want to provide entrepreneurs and sort of other types of people that can come alongside, CFO resources and et cetera, that can help these early stage companies. And so grabbing those different types of talent and resource and packaging them in a really sort of curated, thoughtful way around, what these early stage companies need is what sort of, quite frankly, has produced a really powerful sort of solution in the market, under the MT Ventures sort of brand for early stage companies. And, Greg, you asked, like, these are the five that we have right now. And, what we've learned is, there's a lot more sort of areas we're looking at, sort of the corporate services area. We're looking at sort of a number of other areas, and we're sort of trying to roll out sort of roughly one a year. And sort of all based on sort of what we've learned to date, and also, the different sort of needs that we sort of see when we're talking to clients in the market.
I want to talk a bit about, I don't know if you've heard of artificial intelligence, but it's quite popular these days. A lot of discussion, a lot of activity. So there's a lot of opportunities that law firms and clients kind of see or think they see in this. I'm wondering if you can let us know how to best leverage AI, and what should we be mindful of in this rapidly evolving space?
So if I can jump in here first, like, since the explosion in sort of last November of generative AI, I mean, we took a little pause and step back and said, because everybody was like, how are we going to use this? What's this going to mean to law firms? We took a step back and said, look, MT3 has been using AI for 10 years. I've been using machine learning to help us in our reviews of, you know, terabytes of data. So instead of doing linear reviews that we used to, we'll use machine learning to prioritize records for a review. And what our experience there, and it's really evolved over the years because the technology is constantly changing, but what our experience there told us was that to use this these technology and tools and in a really different way sometimes than other people approach them, we just need to have a very, very defensible process. So we need to understand the technology. We need to understand how it's working so that if I need to stand up in a courtroom and give evidence, I can do that. And I can say, here's the process that we adopted in this case, and it's defensible. And this is how we used a machine to help us identify what was relevant in amongst millions of records, but we only had to review 50,000 of those. And then layer, you know, on top of that, we're also, some of the tools that we were using had sentiment analysis functionality built in. So we use those during investigations. And we also were using, this is sort of prior to the generative AI explosion, also pre-built AI models to help us find key pieces of evidence. But we would use these sort of pre-built models and then train our own and build our own AI models. So we had that background already and that real comfort with using AI. And then you sort of have to separate and say, well, there's machine learning and there's generative AI, and how do they differ? And I think, you know, we come around really to the same place. We have to understand the technology that we're going to use either internally. We're going to understand how we're going to use it, how we're going to still protect our clients' information, security, privacy, and how we're going to make sure that the process for using it is defensible so that the quality of our legal advice and the work we do for our client stays at the level it's always been at. So that's the experience that we've had for years, and we really are just sort of expanding on that and following through with that.
Yeah, and what's been, just build on that, and what's been, it has been really interesting to go like this past, you know, 10 months or whatever it is, to watch the level of interest and everything grow, but to go through that, as you said, Susan, having this framework of, you know, 10 plus years of experience inside the organization and quite frankly, navigate it a bit differently. You know, it wasn't sort of eyes wide open. It was sort of, well, we have a framework for this already. How are we now applying it to this, quite frankly, just next generation of these tools? And, you know, so, you know, the way I would sort of, you know, frame, you know, I'll call it more from a structural perspective, how we've navigated it is, you know, in the broader firm has sort of broken it down and said, well, how do we actually think about this from a policy perspective? And I think that I encourage everybody when you're, as you're sort of facing, you know, the massive disruption going on right now with respect to AI, you know, saying, okay, what is our policy framework? And in particular, you know, I would encourage people not to go overkill, quite frankly. And what I mean by that is you see these reactions where, you know, banning all AI in the organization, which is, I would suggest, it might be overkill. And at the same time, just sort of fully embracing it without sort of any framework or training, whatever. It's like the policy should be thoughtful. We think about sort of how you sort of educate people. So that whole framework is an important piece that every organization should be focused on. You know, we put a separate task force together, again, that's existed for a long time with student and other sort of leadership, where we actually have a framework for looking at new products. That what's interesting over the past 6 to whatever months is like the explosion of you know, all of our inboxes of sort of new products and, you know, new solutions that are out there. I think sort of having a very methodical approach to sort of understanding what your needs are in your organization, whether on the client side or the law firm side, and don't just get enamored with the best salesperson or the fanciest email, but sort of say, here's our needs, and let's work backwards from our needs and actually sort of with a framework analysis, sort of say which one of these products can sort of help address those. And also a framework, quite frankly, for sort of saying we're only going to be evaluating so many products at a given time so we don't overwhelm our security and other folks. Just having a really thoughtful approach to sort of that review. And then the third, and I think probably now the most important piece that I encourage everybody to really be thinking about is sort of organizational impact and professional impact. And what I mean by that is, like, we have a separate group that's looking very specifically at what does this mean going forward? And I'll give you some very specific examples on training their next generation of talent? What does it mean from how we price work and all of those factors inside our business and the profession, and ensure that we're being very thoughtful about sort of what we're doing about. And I'll give you a very specific example, Greg. Like, you know, we just had a discussion, you know, I think whatever it was a week ago, because we're coming up on sort of the summer student sort of hiring process. And you could, one version of this is, you know, like you're essentially making decisions when you hire summer students that has an impact 3+, even 4 years out, you know, when they ultimately sort of are full-fledged associates and working in inside the firm. And so you look at sort of the speed that some of these tools and solutions are impacting certain functions that, quite frankly, associates and nursing students would and are involved in. You could come to the view, well, wow, maybe we don't need as many summer students, you know, this round, because 3 years out, we don't expect to get the same level of work. It's an important question to be facing, and having sort of a group that sort of understands the issues. And, you know, from our perspective, we said, no, like we actually, you know, understand that, but we're not going to address that potential sort of reduction in what I'll call traditional work for that group by reducing the number of summer students that we're going to hire. We're going to hire the same number that we are, but we need to really focus on sort of over the next year or two, thinking about different ways that we're going to provide training and learning opportunities for them so that they will develop as fast and, quite frankly, even faster than the current Arkin student associates develop. So the point being is that just using that as an example, really having a group that's thinking about sort of the longer term impacts on the organization and what the needs will be is something I'd strongly encourage those that are listening to this podcast to really be thinking about.
I also think, just to add back into that, when law firms are thinking about that and thinking about, you know, where they're going next, it's really also thinking, are you still going to need the same number of people? Because what you're dealing with are more complex, sometimes more complex problems. You're definitely dealing with more information and more data, which has impacted my practice significantly, because, you know, we used to talk about hundreds of gigs of data, or, you know, tens of boxes of data, and then hundreds of gigs. And now it's always always terabytes on projects. And so we still need the same number of people because we have so much more information. And to the extent that law firms really become leaders in this area, they'll stand out and they'll have more work and they'll be responding to their client needs. And so we think we have a real opportunity to build what Matt's describing as very much a highly trained team that is familiar with these tools and comfortable with using the technology.
Matt, thank you so much for chatting with us about the opportunities of technology and innovation. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, big thanks, Greg, for having us on.
This has been Greg Hudson for CL Talk. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for tuning into CL Talk. You can listen to the latest episodes on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and all major listening channels. Just search for CL Talk.